Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. And joining us today from San Francisco is Tyler Schultz. Tyler is the founder of a new medical device startup, but is most famous for being one of the key whistleblowers in the Theranos case. Tyler will also be speaking with us March 30th at the 2020 Compliance Institute, which will be taking place in Nashville. Tyler, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today and then later for joining us in Nashville.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Very happy to have you. So I've got so many questions to ask, and we'll be talking a lot more in Nashville and hearing from you there. But for now, let me ask you first, can you give us an overview of what you'll be talking about at the Compliance Institute?
Yes, at the Compliance Institute, I'll be telling this story in full, you know, going from when I first met Elizabeth when I was 20 years old to working at the company to reaching out to regulators and working with a Wall Street Journal reporter. Through when they threatened me with legal action, and then finally the Wall Street Journal article is finally coming out. And it's a long story, and there's a lot of details in there, so can't get into all of it in this podcast, but we'll do a much deeper dive when we're in Nashville together.
Yeah, very much looking forward to it. Now, from your experience, which I want to tap into, you know, really as somebody who came forward and spoke up, what makes people hesitant, do you think, to raise their hand and speak up when they see something that is wrong? I mean, there are a lot of people at Theranos who are concerned about what was there. You know, you were rare in that you really spoke up. What do you think is it that holds so many people back?
Yeah, so I think at Theranos, one of the big things was that people had seen examples of their coworkers speaking up in the past, and it never worked out well. So the company didn't seem to learn from it or adjust course. The employees were fired on the spot. And Theranos had even sued some former employees in the past. So everyone was kind of afraid of the potential for litigation. But on top of that, you know, there were a lot of people who had visas that were dependent on working at Theranos. The company paid a little bit better than industry standard. They paid pretty big relocation bonuses that could be taken away if you didn't work there for a certain amount of time. You know, there were a lot of young people with student debt. So there were a lot of reasons to kind of stick around. Again, people just saw examples of their coworkers speaking up, and it wasn't beneficial to anybody. So why would you do it?
Yeah, it sounds like it was all downside, no upside to coming forward. You did, though, speak up and ended up actually talking to your grandfather, who's a board member, and even he had a hard time believing you. Why do you think those in a position to do something often can't see it? Is it that they don't want to? Have they been led down a path themselves? What's your sense?
Yeah, so I think they don't want to. I think you kind of hit it on the nose there. But I think with this story, it was especially difficult because it was a story that people so badly wanted to believe in. You know, you had this young female entrepreneur who dropped out of Stanford. She was, you know, lauded as a genius. It was just a story that you wanted to believe in. And the vision was so good. You know, it was taking an experience that is very painful, very expensive, very slow, and making it cheaper, faster, and more accurate. More comfortable. It was giving people the ability to take control of their own health. There was just so much about this story to love that I think it was really hard to kind of watch the downfall, especially if you were someone like a board member.
Yeah, so you were both financially and, you know, from an ego perspective invested in the company. I imagine for people it was very hard to really admit, geez, maybe I totally misjudged this thing.
Yeah, I think that's always a tough thing to admit, especially when you have a board where you have, you know, former secretaries of state and defense and CEOs of huge corporations. You know, these are people who are not used to being wrong. These are people who have been wrong very, very few times in their lives, and I think did not want to admit that they were wrong when they were clearly wrong.
Yeah, and people don't like that. You know, it's funny, as you're saying that, I was thinking of the book Being Wrong by Catherine Schultz, and I was wondering if she's a relative.
No. All right,
Unrelated.
well, unrelated, but it's still worth a read. And
Yeah.
she talks about the, just our passion for not being wrong, because, we need to have confidence in ourselves to get through the day. And anything that
Yeah,
erodes that, we
good
tend to
point.
have a very strong negative reaction to. Now, Theranos was a horribly dysfunctional company. I read John Carreyrou's book about it, watched the documentary. It really was a portrait of something that's really out of bounds of what most people would ever encounter in their lives. And thankfully, nowhere near where most companies are. How can compliance ethics officers at a healthier organization, one that doesn't have the degree of dysfunctionality that you had at Theranos, come forward when they see something wrong? Yeah, that's an interesting point that you brought up. I think there are very few companies that are as dysfunctional as Theranos, but I'm amazed at how often people come up to me and say that they've experienced something very similar, just on a different scale. It was maybe not at the $10 billion scale, but at a much smaller scale, people kind of can see what happened at Theranos and they can see parallels to experiences in their own lives. So things like this at a different scale, I think, happen all the time. And at companies, I think it's great if you have things like internal whistleblowing hotlines, but even more important than that, I think it all comes down to culture. And at Theranos, even if we had a whistleblowing hotline, I don't think anybody would have used it because we would have been afraid of who was on the other end of that hotline. We would have been afraid that the Sonny, the president and COO of the company, would have heard the whistleblowing complaint and tried to find out who it was and reprimand them. So I think it all comes down to culture, and you need to develop a culture where you're allowed to have disagreements with people and you can resolve them in a healthy way and people can feel like they're being listened to. And people need to see that it's a productive thing. I think that's the biggest thing. There needs to be a culture where raising concerns is seen as something productive, not as something vindictive, I guess.
Right, and not suicidal at the same time. Now,
Yeah, not suicidal. That'd be good.
yeah, I mean, unfortunately, too often that's what it's seen as, is an act of career suicide, and it is a difficult road
Yeah.
for people, even those take things internally. Now, one of the hallmarks that's often a case in organizations where there is a lot of wrongdoing, it's wholesale, is they don't necessarily look that way from the outside, and even on the inside, there can be structures put in place where people just do their one job. They don't know what's going on elsewhere in the organization, so they can't really see the full picture, which, is what was going on, as I've read partially Theranos. For a compliance officer working in an organization that seems to be healthy, it's a legitimate organization, what do they need to be on the lookout for to make sure that there isn't something fundamentally wrong percolating within their organization?
Yeah, so I think there's a few things they could look out for. So at Theranos, I think one of the big red flags that we can see retrospectively was that departments were very siloed. So like my lab was discouraged from talking to other labs. Tons of people who, there when I first started working there, I was working with senior scientists who had been there for several years who had never actually seen the product. And I think when you see that level of secrecy and kind of segregation, I think that's a big red flag that compliance officers could look out for. And I think another one is looking at company turnover because people quit Theranos all the time. It was really like a revolving door. And I think I don't even think we had a compliance officer, but if we had a compliance officer, that would have been, I think, a big clue to them that something was off. When the people who are working there do not want to be working there, something is wrong.
Yeah, definitely for both them personally and then potentially very devastating perspective legally as well. Last question as we're talking here, going back to what we talked about at the very beginning before the call began, you're right now at a small startup, just three people. How is your experience there influencing the way you want to approach the culture at your organization and the ability of people to come forward?
Yeah, so I mean, I learned a lot of lessons from Theranos that I can apply to the new company that I started. And I think again, I think the most important thing is the culture of disagreement. And right now it's an easy culture to maintain because there's only three of us working full time. But that is something that we want to make sure we take forward as we grow. So, you know, no one is afraid we're not afraid to tell each other we think we're wrong. And what we're able to do is have arguments, but at the end of the argument say, okay, well, we can design an experiment to actually figure out what's going on here. We can all learn something and we can all move forward. And that's kind of how we handle disagreements. And I think that's really healthy and is something that we need to continue doing as we grow. And then I think another just big difference between what our company is doing and what Theranos did is that after leaving Theranos, I went and I started working in a lab at Stanford for about 3 years with a professor who has been filing patents and publishing papers on our technology for over 15 years. So it's been you know, well vetted, peer reviewed, really strong foundation. Whereas when Elizabeth started her company, she supposedly pulled this out of thin air. You know, she didn't license any IP from Stanford. She wouldn't tell anybody what the technology actually was. And that's not really how science is done. Science takes a long time. It needs to be peer reviewed. You need to have other people vet it. So I think that's a big difference between what we're doing and what Elizabeth did.
Well, I think it's a good advice is, you know, as companies try and protect their intellectual property, which they rightly should, you have to ask also the question is sometimes there may be more learning and better validation and make sure you're on the right track by letting others get a better sense of what you're doing. Well, Tyler, thanks so much for talking to us today. I really look forward to hearing more from you and Nashville at the Compliance Institute. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turtletaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.